There's a lot of terrific science fiction being written nowadays, but as a genre, its first golden age was probably the mid-20th century, when space exploration and atomic energy and all the rest were new and bedazzling. One prolific sci-fi writer from the old days took his feverish imagining a big step farther. L. Ron Hubbard founded a religion, Scientology, which from the beginning focused on recruiting actors and other show business folk. And the story of Hubbard and his church reads like the most incredible fictional saga ever. Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief is the definitive new book by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and New Yorker staff writer Lawrence Wright. And he joins me now. Larry, welcome to Studio 360.
It's good to talk to you again, Kurt.
So when did you first get interested in Scientology?
You know, the first time I ever ran into Scientology, I was at school in Tulane in New Orleans. This was back in the late 60s. And I lived in an apartment, and below the apartment there was a little storefront, and it was a Church of Scientology mission or something. I went down and met some of them, and they showed me the e-meter, and I held the cans and so on. So I was curious about it. And of course, like everybody, I heard about all the movie stars and so on that had passed through Scientology, and I wondered, what's in it for them? You know, what do they get out of it? And I got more curious as the church's reputation became darker, and yet people like Tom Cruise and John Travolta, et cetera, still continued to ally their reputations to an organization that many people in America regard with great suspicion, if not abject fear, if you're some of the former members.
I'm fascinated by this transformation of L. Ron Hubbard from fiction writer, and I didn't know, for instance, that he was a pal of the great Robert Heinlein, to the founder of what is now this multi-billion dollar religious institution. Talk about his career for some time as a not unsuccessful writer in the 30s and 40s.
You know, as a writer, I kind of have to take my hat off to him because he holds the Guinness Book of World Records for the most number of books published, more than 1,000. And he legendarily wrote 100,000 words a month. In the old days, and when he was in the pulp fiction era, he would put a roll of butcher paper into his typewriter platen, and it was a physical action for him. He would perspire. He was writing so quickly, and when he was done, he'd take a T-square and cut it off and then roll in the next story, and off he went. He was paid a penny a word like most pulp writers of that era.
So Hubbard's fervid, on-all-the-time imagination comes into play, I guess, when he writes this improbable instant bestseller, Dianetics, in 1950, which I was interested to see that he excerpted in Astounding Science Fiction magazine first.
Right.
Now, explain what Dianetics was, is, and to what degree he seems, in your view, serious about it as a way to understand existence.
Well, he wrote this in a month, a 450-page book. It's a very breezy, hasty work, as you can imagine. But his theory is that there are two minds inside you. There's your analytical, reasonable, rational mind, the mind that is like a computer that's absolutely perfect, remembers everything, is a perfectly calibrated, well-oiled machine. And then there's another mind, and it's called the reactive mind. And it's full of your fears and neuroses, all the things that cause you to behave wrongly or forget things or become ill and so on. These fears, etc., are all caused by what he calls engrams. These are like memories, but they're more profound than that. They, in his opinion, they're actually cellular in nature. And the notion in Dianetics is you flush out all these old memories and that are controlling your behavior, drain them of their emotional affect, and gradually purge your reactive mind until it disappears entirely and you become clear. That's the term that Hubbard coined for that state.
And then he and an apprentice developed this primitive-sounding apparatus to tell if people were clear. It was literally just originally a couple of tin cans connected to this, a kind of primitive lie detector, right?
Exactly. It's the E-meter. It's one-third of a lie detector. It measures your galvanic skin responses. You know, what typically happens is, you know, your auditor will see the needle move. And you'll say, wait, what's that? And you might think, well, what? I don't know, an image came into my mind. And we'll describe the image. And you might say, well, I see a farmhouse. Well, you know, you have any idea? Look around. You know, what do you see? Well, it looks like, you know, 18th century France. And all the time this is happening, the E-meter is validating this as a real event.
Which is so interesting, again, that this was invented, this whole thing, the E-meter, the religion, rests by a fiction writer, part of whose the rapture that he creates is turning what to me looks like a series of fictions that individuals conjure into apparent reality. It's the kind of ultimate fiction becomes real experiment.
Yeah, in a way, you're right. It's a funny thing. I hadn't thought about it, but you replicate Hubbard's previous existence before he became a religious leader.
As so much of Scientology seems to be the past lives thing, the universe is 70,000 times as old as it actually is. There was this planetary confederation like in Star Wars millions of years ago that included Earth. And yet, for 60 years, intelligent people have become believing adherents. Until they become apostates altogether and leave the church, do they have doubts about some of this stuff?
I'm sure that in Scientology, as in any religion, there are people who are more believers than others. And I think what's important about esoteric or what we might think of as absurd beliefs, it serves a purpose. You know, when you make a declaration that you believe in something that other people think is ridiculous, you step across a line into a community. And there's no, you know, nothing separates that community from the rest of society. There's no language barrier. There's no ethnic barrier. There's nothing except the beliefs that draw a line between that religious community and the rest of society. And the more that group is persecuted for the absurdity of their beliefs, the more solidified in some ways they become.
And with somebody like Ron Hubbard, once the IRS and governments actually are chasing him, his paranoia about governments chasing him becomes validated.
Yeah, and then he chased them back. You know, the most amazing feature of Scientology history in some respects is this thing he called Operation Snow White. And in the 70s, he was so worried about what not just the American government but other world governments had on Scientology. So he designed this operation and put his wife in charge to infiltrate governments and even newspapers. And so more than 5,000 Scientologists were put into this operation. And it wasn't until the FBI raided Scientology headquarters in 1977 that they discovered the true scale of what was the largest infiltration, certainly of American government, by any power.
No, I found that just amazing. You, in the end, you seem to portray him not exactly as a charlatan, although there are things he is alleged to have said and said over the years that make people think, oh, yeah, he was just a clever cynic in it for the money. But it seems as though, whether out of mental disorder or otherwise, he believed what he was preaching mostly. Is that true, do you think?
You know, here's the way I think about it, Kurt. I do think he had mental problems. And at one point, he wrote to the Veterans Administration asking for psychiatric help. And there's no record he actually got it. But I think that he was trying to heal himself. He was a complicated, charismatic man. I think he was troubled. He was a spellbinding figure, and he was in some ways a little ridiculous. But, you know, give him credit. If he, you know, he wrote more books than you and I will ever have the opportunity to read. He created a religion that somehow survived. And it's a fascinating organization.
And one can also see Scientology as itself, to me, as a kind of retro artifact of the 50s with its sci-fi-ish miracle cure themes. Why has it endured? Why didn't it die off with so many other fads and momentary cultural phenomena of that era?
Well, the central feature is the tax exemption, Kurt, that separated it from a lot of marginal religions that couldn't cross that bar. Secondly, you know, the celebrities, you know, having those people as pitchmen is the most valuable commodity the church has. There's nothing else to substitute for it. You know, and the exemplary figure that Hubbard had always wanted to reel in, they finally got with Tom Cruise. But I think it's notable that you don't see the rise of new celebrities going into the church. I think that there's a kind of radioactivity that surrounds it right now that makes it, you know, a bigger consideration for people to publicly declare that they are Scientologists, whether they are or not. And secondly, if they do not come to an accounting of the abuses that innumerable people have talked about, 12 people have told me that they've been beaten by the leader of the Church of Scientology. More than 20 have witnessed it. I know that the law has trouble dealing with this because they are a religion, but it's not going to protect Scientology against its future if it doesn't come to terms with its present.
Larry Wright, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief is out right now. I spoke with Lawrence Wright about Scientology and Hubbard for a lot longer than you just heard, and you can hear more of our conversation at studio360.org. While you're there, why not sign up for our weekly newsletter? It's the simplest way to stay up to date about everything on the program now and in the future.